Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Well, Heather, thank you so much for telling us your story so far. I think this really helps members of the church get an understanding of the conversion process and some of the social and cultural issues and concerns that someone who joins faces, and maybe how hard it can be to learn things after the fact, sometimes things that are pretty significant. I don't think there are any easy answers for all this, but I think it's important for us to have sensitivity to it. So thank you so much for what you've shared so far.
Welcome.
So here's where your story gets sort of shocking for many people. So why don't you take us from, tell us a little bit about your early marriage and the big shock that came.
Well, after we got married, we both had about a year and a half left of college. So we returned to Utah to go to BYU. And within probably less than 6 months for sure of us going back to school, my husband started not wanting to go to the temple, not being really excited about church, just being a little bit depressed in general. And I pressed him about it, and we talked about it, and he told me that he didn't believe anymore.
Now, what year was this? Just in my own life, I like to think about things chronologically.
2002.
2002, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so four years ago, four or five years ago?
About five.
Now, what was that like for you after you'd gone through this big journey into the church? You marry a state president's son, is that right?
I know. I should have you know, had it made, right? I'd done everything right.
Holy moly.
He was a turned missionary. His father was the state president. We got married in the temple. That's the fast track, right?
Yeah.
Should be doing good. But yeah, he wasn't happy at all, and it turns out that he had doubts for a while. I don't want to speak for him or tell his story for him, but he had some doubts on his mission as well that had never been resolved, and he had kind of pushed aside, and it was just one of those things that was building up for him again.
What kind of doubts?
He had a lot of problems with the Book of Mormon on his mission. And his mission president's response was to read the Book of Mormon and pray. And that wasn't really helpful for him.
Like doctrinally or historically?
A little both.
Okay.
A little both. And I think as it progressed, it became more and more historical. You know, this just doesn't add up.
Right.
This isn't right. And he told me that. And at first I was just crushed. I was, you know, in tears a lot. I was really upset. And you know, I just married this person and gone through all of this and had this temple marriage without my family, and now you're telling me you don't believe and what's going on. And my memories of that period aren't so much anger with him. It was as much as just sorrow and confusion.
Sure.
And I'm sure I had my moments where I was upset with him personally, but that's, you know, looking back, that's not how I would categorize that part of my life. It's just being sad about it.
Yeah.
More than anything.
And how'd you deal with it?
I think I dealt with it as well as I could. I did my best to make him understand that while I was upset, that I still loved him.
Right.
And that was important to me. I do love my husband, obviously, but I think he's a wonderful person. But especially when I joined the church, having severed, I don't want to say severed ties, but hurt relationships with my family, and probably not always dealt with things the best way I could, I think that in some way I was determined not to let that happen again. And I wasn't going to let a church come between me and my husband as it had between me and my family of origin in some ways.
Right.
And I don't know if that's just marriage or maturity or a little bit of both, but I remember consciously making that decision that this was not going to, you know, affect us, that I loved my husband, that I married my husband. And especially now, being out of the church as long as I have, you know, you see so many marriages that fall apart when someone decides that they don't believe anymore. And I think the church fosters that a little bit in a way that, you know, you hear how important it is to put the church first, and, you know, all the things that you should look for in your future mate are, you know, related to the church. And it's such a big presence in everyone's lives and everyone's marriage, even to a certain extent. And maybe I had a leg up being a convert.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't maybe indoctrinated.
How did he take your loving acceptance?
I'm sure he was relieved to some extent. I think I probably came off looking pretty good because his family didn't take it well at all. And so in comparison, although I'm not a perfect person, and I'm sure I did not handle it perfectly, and, you know, we did have our arguments and our rough times in comparison to how some of our friends, but mostly his family, took it. I probably came off looking pretty good.
Did he tell his dad over the phone, or did he go home and have that conversation?
Eventually that conversation was had. Eventually, around the time of spring conference, his family knew something was up, and they were concerned, and they decided to come up for conference. And I believe that that's when the discussion, like the big lay it down, I don't believe this is over, you know.
And he was He was convinced.
He was done. Oh, yeah, he was done.
And was there studying that he did after his mission?
Oh.
And what is Amway? You mentioned Amway in the notes, too. Like.
My husband looked up to his dad a lot. And his dad had decided that he was going to do QuickStar, which is like an Amway spinoff pyramid type thing.
Sure.
And his dad was trying to convince us not too long after we were married that this was a great thing and we should get in this with him. And he decided, you know, okay, well, let's look into this. And he looked into it and he was like, no, this isn't something we want to do. And I think it was kind of just a light bulb moment for him that my dad was wrong about this. And what else could my dad be wrong about?
Sure.
Maybe he doesn't know everything. And, you know, and here I am thinking about this business decision and I'm doing all this research. And, you know, why shouldn't I look at the church in the same way? And it wasn't so much, and it was just kind of just a moment, something clicked with him, is how he's put it. And I probably told him, he's probably going to be like, well, that's not how it was hears this. But, I mean, that's the gist of it.
Do you have a sense for the things that he studied? What were the nails in the coffin for him?
A lot about Joseph Smith, polygamy, the witnesses, just early church history.
Yeah.
Early church history. I know he spent for a long time, a lot of time on some of the bulletin boards that there are for people who left the church, recovery from Mormonism. I think everybody who has problems with the church and goes through their angry period probably spent some time in recovery from Mormonism. I almost hate mentioning it because it's not the best, I think, example of people who leave the church, because I think you see people at their worst there.
Right.
They're going through their angry phase. I spent some time there, too. And I first thought, that's a good angry phase place.
Sure.
Not some place I think you want to stay forever, personally.
Right.
But.
So what was the overall reaction from dad and mom? And
They were just so upset. They were so upset. And especially his mom. She was his baby. And she's still his baby. But that was really hard. It just went from they went from sadness to anger to anger. He got a phone call from his sister saying that she just didn't think she could have a relationship with him anymore. She didn't know what they would talk about. They wouldn't have anything in common anymore. I don't want to list. I know I don't want to list off like a million horrible things because I don't want to, and they're not evil people. But I mean, we were told that I was pregnant. Right, I'd gotten pregnant about the time this happened with my son, and we were told that he was not to have my father-in-law's name because he would not be serving a mission. And I mean, just things that people say out of shock and anger.
Right.
And just they were just crushed.
Right.
I mean, they had, you know, 8 children who were faithful, and, you know, now almost all of them have gone to BYU. You know, everyone was married in the temple, and they were just felt like they were losing him. I was like, he was dying or something.
And did they blame you, or did they apologize to you?
You
or?
Know, they never, no one has ever come out and blamed me. And I get the feeling that even though he left before I did, and at this time I was doing my best to be faithful, I wasn't there every Sunday. It was a lot more difficult for me, especially being at BYU and being in this young married ward, and everybody sitting there in pairs, and you're going by yourself, and that was hard. But I think there's probably some resentment towards me.
Well, Heather, thanks so much for sharing a bit about your story, about your conversion to Mormonism, and then your exit. As you and I corresponded through email, it was clear to me that you felt really strongly about, you know, feeling that it was important that you tell your story and that you share what you've experienced. So I just thought it'd be interesting to hear a little bit about, you know, why was this story so important for you to tell? You're clearly at peace with having left. You guys have been out for a few years now. Why now? Why talk? Why share your story? What do you hope, you know, what good can come from this sort of being part of the public record for generations to come?
Well, to backtrack for a few years, when my husband first left the church, I got involved with one of the online boards, the New Order Mormon board. And I found some support there, and it was a really good place. We actually share a mutual friend from that board, Ann Porter.
Yeah.
Is just a wonderful online friend of mine. She's just, I can't say enough wonderful things about her. And I got involved with a few of the other boards, and then I kind of dropped off the internet scene as we, you know, became more comfortable with things, and then turned in our resignation letters and all of that. And then a few months ago, the post-Mormon board opened up, and I heard about that from a few of my friends who had also left the church or were in the process of leaving the church. And I guess I got involved with some people in my area talking and meeting for lunch and those sort of things. And it just kind of, it struck me.
In Houston?
In my area, in Houston. And it kind of struck me. I guess I kind of forgotten about how hard it is for people who are still in marriages with people who are in the church or still dealing with a lot of the issues with their family, because their families are still members of the church, or their close friends are members of the church, or because they live in Utah or Idaho in an area with a lot of members. And I guess I wanted to be involved in that again and to show support, because there had been so many people that had shown me support when I was going through that period of my life.
So this is sort of a way to show empathy and maybe share a story.
Yeah, and just, I mean, because it's a really difficult thing just during that transition period, and there's some people who are going to be in that position indefinitely. I mean, for example, you know, my husband has left the church. I have left the church. But my husband's family, he has a very large family, and I don't expect in any way for them to ever leave. And so we're always going to have that part of the church in our lives. And so, I mean, and so partly for, you know, my own support in that way, but a lot because, you know, I can relate to that, and I don't want to say that I can give wonderful advice, because I certainly don't know everything and I don't have all the answers, but to be able to give support to that community.
Sure. Well, I do know that stories can be transformative in how they help people heal or make it through hard times. I mean, the biggest issue is just for people to not feel like they're alone. So,
right, definitely.
So you had mentioned to me that maybe you had a few words of wisdom or advice for family members who are trying to cope with or deal with those who have decided to leave the church. So, again, this isn't, I don't even believe that on your part this is an appeal to say all Mormons leave the church. I would imagine that you and your husband both would say if the church works for you, follow through. But I bet, maybe through your bumps and bruises and scars, you have a few pieces of advice or words of wisdom for loved ones who are trying to not make things worse and help maintain a relationship while their loved one is leaving. So what thoughts do you have for our listeners?
Right. And like you said, I don't expect everyone to leave the church. I don't, wish for the church to necessarily implode or be burned off the face of the earth or anything like that. But I think that in the end, I think our relationships as human beings are more important than the church or than religion or than any religion. The church claims to be focused about families and about relationships and about how we are all children of this Heavenly Father and how we're all interconnected. And so I think that keeping the focus on that and the relationships is the most important thing. And again, through my experience with the boards, I've heard just so many horrible, sad stories about relationships that have been just destroyed when someone has decided that they don't believe anymore. And it's just a tragedy. And I think there are things that we can do so that it doesn't have to end that way. I mean, I understand people's feelings are going to be hurt, and I understand that there are transitional periods, but I think there are ways to make them less painful. And the two things that usually come up the most often, I think, probably in my personal experience as well as those that I've heard from other people, are, I guess, boundary issues would be one, and the other would be just the feeling that people who leave the church get that they're somehow suddenly second-class human beings and that there's something fundamentally wrong with them and they're fundamentally not as good anymore.
Okay.
And I think the church in some way encourages that because they tell their members when they leave, people leave the church because they're offended, because they want to sin.
Right.
Or what's the third one? Oh, my goodness, I just drew a blank. Because they're offended, because they want to sin, or because they're somehow arrogant or prideful, intellectual.
Right.
And for me personally.
Or they never believed to begin with.
Right. They never believed to begin with. Or sometimes it's that, where they never believed to begin with. And I think, I think of myself personally, yes, there are offensive things in the church, but there are offensive things in lots of places in the world. I mean, people have offended me at my job, but I haven't quit it.
Right.
My husband has done things to offend me, but I'm still married. And so, I didn't leave the church because anyone hurt my feelings. I think, I'm more mature than that. And I think most people are. I don't think that, I'm not saying that never happens, but I'm saying that the vast majority of people that I know left the church, it was not because they didn't get the calling that they wanted or, somebody did something personal to them or their family, so they just decided that they're going to quit this church.
Right.
Or they didn't decide that, hey, I would really like to have a cup of coffee on Sunday morning, so I'm going to up and quit Mormonism.
Right.
And, I think of myself personally, I moved to Utah. I joined this church. I read the Book of Mormon before I got baptized. I had a marriage where my family couldn't be there. I sacrificed a lot of things, and to think that I would just leave because someone wasn't nice to me or because I wanted to have a glass of wine with dinner or, do all these things is just, it's kind of silly when you think about it because the church isn't a religion that you can take lightly. It takes a lot of sacrifice. So anyone who's been in the church for any amount of time to begin with probably isn't somebody who's just going to give up for a silly reason.
Right.
And so, I don't know. I think it's something that gets told to try to make people feel better, and in the end, it creates this feeling of us and them, and this judgment that does not help relationships. Or when I think, I understand that that people don't necessarily want to sit down with someone and say, okay, what do you think is wrong with the church? You know, why did they leave? And maybe they don't want to hear, you know, all the gruesome details.
Yeah.
And I personally, and I wouldn't do that either. You know, I'm not going to, I have lots of Mormon friends, and I have Mormon family members, and I'm not going to sit down and dissect church history with them. I'm not going to tell them anything that they don't want to know if they're happy where they are.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
I'm not out to destroy the church. I'm not out to cause problems in anyone's, you know, personal life or balance, because it's not an easy thing to leave. And it can create problems in people's marriages and families. But I don't, at the same time, I have to walk that balance of, you know, I don't want people to make those assumptions about me. And so I have to tell them as much as I think is prudent to walk that line, because a lot of members of the church are going to automatically assume that, you know, you must have done something wrong. You must never have believed. You must never have had a testimony. You must want to do these things.
Yeah, there's at least two. First of all, I think it's really great that you try really hard on your end to be as sensitive as possible. There's two immediate things that pop to my mind that actually make this quite complicated. The first is that, you know, I once decided that I wanted to read the New Testament with my kids because I thought that, you know, it maybe and somehow it would be less violent than the Old Testament or the Book of Mormon. And so I start reading the New Testament, and right in there, you know, Jesus says, I have come to separate, I don't know the exact words, but the sense that I got was, I've come to separate husband from wife, parent from child, son from, you know, parent. And I guess those scriptures really can be used to drive a wedge and to tell a Christian, you know what, your faith does come before your sibling or your parent or your child. And so you really do need to erect those barriers and protect yourself. That's one issue. The other issue is, you know, people, a lot of times we want to think our testimonies are super rock solid. And in some cases, I'm sure they are. But in other cases, we really do treat our testimonies like soap bubbles. We try and protect them in the palms of our hands because we're scared from them getting popped. Because the truth is, at the end of the day, many of us like to talk like we walk by knowledge, but really we walk by faith. And so when someone who we love and trust, who maybe even part of our testimony was based on their testimony, when they up and leave the church, it is very threatening. And so so it's not like you just have to say to them, okay, you don't want to alienate these people, you don't want to drive them further away, and you need to be Christ-like and love them. So be really kind and patient and understanding as they've left the church, and try and understand all you can and be their best friend. The truth is, their immediate reaction is protection, protect myself.
Right.
The last thing they're thinking about is your pain and your needs. They're thinking, I need to protect and guard my testimony, because if I even have a candid conversation with them, I could start falling down that slippery slope as well. So that's what you're dealing with, you know. It's
right.
A pickle.
And I totally understand that. But I think that there are more than one ways to protect yourself. And I think that sometimes the easiest way to protect yourself is to be a bully and to say, well, the problem isn't me, the problem isn't my church, the problem is you, and there's something wrong with you. And I have these, you know, simple, easy answers that the church has hand-fed me, you know, that there is something wrong with you. You know, and I'm not expecting someone to immediately say, oh, there must be something wrong with the church, but I think there are other ways to think about this. I think you can say that, you know, okay, well, maybe this person isn't going to be a member of the church, but maybe they're still a good person. Maybe I still love them. Maybe they still love me. And Heavenly Father gave us agency, and the church teaches that we all have the right to believe or not believe what we so choose. And the church says that it respects that. And I don't think that the church can, well, it can because it does, but I don't think it's fair for the church to say on one hand, you know, we believe in the right for everyone to believe whatever they want and worship who or how they choose, but at the same time, people who leave the church are just not good people.
Yeah.
And they never come out and say that, but they're second-class people.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, there's this and this and this wrong with them. And then they are them and we are us. And you have to be careful and you can't talk to them and you need to stay away, you know? I mean, everyone's asked in their temple recommend, do you associate with people who work against the church? And...
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we believe that you have the right to do that, but we're not going to be nice or Christ-like to you. And so it's, and for a church that you know, is trying so hard to emphasize that Christ-like facet of itself, it's very odd.
I guess it is fair to say that in spite of the scriptures that I quoted earlier about Christ coming to separate family members, you could just as easily cite, I guess, you know, where Christ has, you know, he goes to the lepers, he has dinner with the sinners and the publicans, and he reaches out to the prostitute, and he definitely seems to make overtures to going the extra mile to understand and love and spend time with those who the rest of us would consider to be the most fallen. So maybe that's
right.
Some encouraging role modeling by Christ.
And at the same time, you know, you have the temple, which teaches that, you know, we have to be sealed with our family, and family is the most important thing, and we all have to be sealed together so that we can be with Heavenly Father. So which is it? Did Christ come to separate us, you know, even if that's what it takes to follow him, or did Christ come so that we could all be together again with Heavenly Father?
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to have it both ways.
Yeah. So what types of boundaries, you know, have you and your in-laws established to help? Are there any boundaries that come to mind that maybe that
well,
you've...
Well, for the most part, it's kind of... We've gotten to the point where we've had most of the difficult discussions and everyone's kind of come to realize that we've agreed to disagree. And we just try to live our lives around the church. And as much as possible, just to just not make it an issue. Because it doesn't have to be the central issue of every interaction that we have with them. Now, at the same time, you know, you walk into their house and, you know, the proclamation of the family is hanging on the wall, and there will be half a dozen Book of Mormons on the dining room table most days, and... If you're over there in the evening, they're going to have family prayer before they send the little ones off to bed. And, you know, it's never going to be a relationship where, I mean, for the rest of our lives, you know, if we choose to have a relationship with them, which we do, the church is going to be there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's more difficult than others. You know, there are times when we really like to do something with them, but they've got church engagements 4 days a week or things like that. For the most part, it's an uneasy truth. There's some members of our family that are open-minded enough that, and are, I guess, secure enough that they feel they can talk to us about some things to a point, or have a sense of humor about some things. And there are others that we just can't talk to at all and not bring things up at all because it's just too sensitive for them. And a lot of that has to do with just engaging personal relationships and knowing different personalities. But so for the most part, we've gotten to the point that I guess that they've realized that we're still the same people. And I think that's a problem that a lot of people have when their family members leave the church. Like, I can remember when we first left, one of my husband's sisters told him that she didn't think she would ever be able to talk to him again. Not because she was upset with him or didn't love him, but because she thought they would have nothing in common. She's, like, honestly did not know what they would talk about.
Like parenting.
Because he was not going to be a member of church.
Like parenting.
Well, she's younger. She wasn't married at the time. But,
like,
And there are, I mean, and I'm not saying, you know, I don't want to stereotype more than I have to, but for the sake of discussion, you know, there are a lot of people in the church who the church is their whole life.
Yeah.
You know, their Sundays and their, you know, all their social activities revolve around the church. And so, I mean, I'm sure that she's not the only person who's ever had that moment of, oh no, you know, what am I gonna, you know, all my interactions with this person, so many of them have revolved around the church, that, you know, what are we gonna have in common, and what kind of person is this person gonna turn into, and, you know, am I even gonna like them anymore, because everything is seen through that lens of the church.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with that back to something we talked about earlier, is just that feeling that some people have that, you know, if I wasn't a member of the church, I would be this horrible person, you know, shooting up heroin in a gutter.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like that. And I think if you can really open your eyes and see that there are just all these wonderful people outside the church, and if someone leaves, it doesn't mean that they can't be a good person anymore, or a person that you would want to interact with anymore.
So, have you guys missed the church at all? Like, are there ever days where you just say, "Man, things are hollow now. Things are empty. Things aren't like they were. I wish I could get some of the good back." You know, even though I'm glad that some of the bad we've been able to distance ourselves from.
There have been times when I've missed the social group of the church. There are not many people. We're both in our late 20s. There are not many people our age who are both college educated. My husband just finished grad school. You know, I have a full-time job, who have small children. We're just kind of in a unique station in life. Most of the people my age that I work with are just getting married. Most of the people who have children my children's age are a good 5 to 10 years older than us.
Right.
And so being outside the church is, and especially when we're not in Utah anymore, so there aren't as many young families who are, I guess, socially compatible with us. And so that's been difficult. And I think it was a little bit harder for my husband, having grown up in the church, really having, because he grew up having that social network a lot, you know, having home teachers, having, you know, his young men's group, having his elders quorum. And you really do, you have that built-in social network. And when you've left the church, you know, it's, you go through an interesting point of, okay, where do I look to find my friends? You know, where do I look to find kids for my kids to play with, or, you know, people for us to go out with as a couple?
Yeah.
And that was hard. Spiritually, not really. We attended a Unitarian church a few times, and I enjoyed it, but I really haven't felt the need to fill that gap in any way. I didn't really have anything missing. When I left, I enjoy reading. I enjoy reading philosophy. I enjoy learning. But I've always been pretty good to do that on my own. I think the only major gap, I guess, that I felt was just the social one. And, you know, as we've gotten older, that's gotten easier.
And I have a lot of friends who, when they leave the church, they actually do one of the first things they do, and they even say this. When I wrote my resignation letter, the first thing I did was go buy a cup of coffee. And now I drink coffee every day, and they have wine with dinner. And, you know, they say that's not why they left, but it's interesting. You know, I sort of feel like no matter what I ever did regarding the church, I don't know, that's just so much part of me that I could never abandon that. You know, I think I'd still pay tithing if I stopped going to church, just because all that stuff just is so much part of my fabric. But that seems to be, you know, the minority of instances. Most instances, people really do run with abandon towards those things that had been most prohibited previously.
I don't think there's anything wrong with experience. A member of the church is probably going to disagree with me, but I don't think there's anything wrong with going out and having a glass of wine with dinner because you've never had a glass of wine. You know, and you want to find out if you like it or not. And I see that as completely different than as someone going out and becoming a lush and drinking a bottle of wine with dinner every night. You know, just, and it's the same thing with having a cup of coffee. I think there's nothing wrong with having those experiences in moderation to find out, you know, okay, this is what I do and don't like, and I've decided this for myself, not because someone else has told me that. And there are a lot of people who go out and try alcohol and decide they don't like it. Or they try coffee and they're like, why would anyone ever want to drink this? And I don't know. I think that there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to have new experiences. I don't think that anyone, I mean, it's not easy to leave the church. It's not easy to send in your resignation letter and to go through all of this anxiety with your family. And then if you're living in the corridor, you have to deal with, you know, your entire social situation around you collapsing and dealing with telling all these people that have been your social network and trying to decide who's going to cut you off and who's going to decide that they really do like you for you. And to me, it's just, I can't imagine someone doing that because they want a cup of coffee.
Sure, sure. No, I know.
I just don't see anything wrong with going out and experimenting, you know, within reason and responsibly, because you can.
Yeah.
Because you.
Sure. I'll ask you two last questions, if that's okay. The first is, I do have a lot of friends who, when they decided to leave the church and they decided that maybe they, you know, weren't believers anymore, it wasn't very long before they started questioning their marriage. Because, you know, when you're married in the temple, you're married under a completely different paradigm.
Yeah.
You choose this person, you know, if you're a female, you choose this person because he's a righteous priesthood holder. You want to be married for time and all eternity. God and Jesus and Joseph Smith are all intricately woven into all these decisions. A mother sort of signs up to the proclamation of the family role. So you're going to be a mommy and have lots of kids, and the husband's going to do his thing. But, you know, there are many for whom sort of all bets are off and everything sort of erodes. And there comes this moment of truth where they have to say, do I really want to stay married? And if so, it may be that there's some radical renegotiation that happens that needs to take place.
Right.
Is this something that's crossed you or your husband's mind that you're comfortable sharing? Or, you know, is this a relevant issue in the experience that you've had counseling others? Or is it just a few fluky friends that I have that have had to deal with this sort of, do we even want to stay married?
I don't know that many people who both have left the church. Most of my experience, and I don't know if there aren't that many couples that leave together, or if it's just that the people that do leave together don't feel the need to seek out community as much as those who do. My experience has been more that, you know, one person leaves and the other person doesn't, and all the reevaluation comes from that end. You know, do I want to stay in this marriage because this person has totally, you know, reset all the boundaries and agreements that we've made, and that's a completely different situation. I think I can honestly say that I never for a second thought that I didn't want to be married to my husband because we got married when we were Mormons and we weren't Mormons anymore. I can say that there have been times when, I don't want to say regret or resent, but I've reflected really heavily on the fact that, you know, we did have children very soon after our marriage, and that things have been more difficult because of that, and that we did get married very quickly. I think we were engaged for about 6 or 8 months before we got married.
Right.
And there have been times when I thought, you know, I wonder how things would be different or how things would be easier if, you know, we hadn't been members of the church and we had gone down this path instead of that. For example, my husband just got through 3 years of grad school, and actually, the only two other people that I know of in his graduating class who had small children were LDS. And so it is, I mean, that was really difficult for us. Here we are in a grad school program where they expected him, you know, to go to school full time, and we had two small children. We had to juggle that with me supporting our family and, you know, two kids under 3 or 4. And so that was really difficult. But I don't know. I married my husband because I loved him. You know, not because of, I mean, did I respect the fact that, you know, he was a righteous priesthood holder and he was a returned missionary. And, I mean, those were all wonderful things. You know, those were extra gold stars or whatever. But I married him because I love him. And, again, I think this goes back to, I don't think that my husband fundamentally changed because he didn't join the church, or he's not a member of the church anymore. He's still pretty much the same person he was then. You know, he might have a cup of coffee every now and then. He doesn't tithe. I mean, there's just, We don't spend 3 hours in church on Sundays, but, I mean, we still have the same basic, you know, an important fundamental moral, ethical, you know, issues, and we still love each other. And I don't think that leaving the church changes most people that much. I really don't.
Right.
And I think if it comes to that point where because you're not a member of the church anymore, you don't want to be married. Did you really marry someone or did you marry the church?
Right.
Did you marry the church's expectations? And I think there are people that do that.
Yeah, for sure.
But I haven't seen that many people who marry the church leave the church. I think those people, I don't know if they're committed in a different way than I was, or if they're just not willing to think about the things that I thought about, or what the case is that way. But I don't know. I married my husband and I love him, and I don't see that he's fundamentally a different person than he was
right.
those years ago.
Well, I guess that's fortunate. So
yes, it is. I'm very grateful for that.
So last question. You know, I've seen this pattern in a lot of people who have left where they usually, the step out of Mormonism is either Episcopalian or Unitarian. Mm-hmm. But very often those peter out. And then maybe there's a step towards Buddhism. But oftentimes it's a very quick, I'll say, descent just for fun into just pure atheism and agnosticism. It's, if you deconstruct the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith, you can very easily use those same deconstruction tools to deconstruct Jesus, a historical Jesus and a historical Bible. And so, you know, by the end, a lot of people are just left disaffected from faith and from religion in general. So I'll just ask you to close this interview telling us about what, you know, where do you lie now in terms of faith or religion or spirituality? And, you know, how do you see your family evolving in a different paradigm? And even, you know, do you have thoughts about the afterlife or heaven, you know, and how do you jibe that with the big changes you've been through over the past 5 years?
Okay, well, right now, I think that I'm at a stage where it's kind of unimportant to me.
Unimportant.
Yeah, it's not something that affects my daily life very often. I mean, we'll go to an LDS service when there's a baptism or a blessing or something like that. We'll, you know, when I'm in town, you know, around my family who are Christians, I'll attend their Christian church for Sunday, you know, to be with them or for family events. But for the most part right now, I think I kind of choose not to think about it too much. I think that, I mean, not to say that I'm ancient or I've seen it all, but I think in my relatively short life that I've seen religion do a lot of really bad things. And those bad things have outweighed a lot of the good things that I've seen. And I think that in my personal life right now, the idea of a God who allows some of the things that happen in his name to happen is kind of disturbing. And so, to me, at this point in my life, not believing in a God, or at least not believing in a God that is involved in people's personal day-to-day life, is much more comforting than a God who chooses to find someone's keys for them, but allows people to die in Iraq every day, or, you know, children to starve on the streets, or things like that. Especially as a mother having children, it's just very difficult for me to imagine a heavenly Father who loves us, who would allow that to happen. I mean, my child falls and scrapes her knee, and I'm running to help her and to comfort her. And I just really can't fathom a heavenly Father or, you know, any sort of God, by whatever name you would choose to call him or her, to allow things like that to happen. And so at this point in my life, it's easier to I just kind of push it to the back burner, and I'm not concerned with it. And I think that most of the good things that are taught by the LDS Church or by other churches as well can be found in other outlets. You know, I can teach my children to be good people without teaching them that they need to believe in Jesus. And I have confidence in that. My kids are good people. You know, they're small people, young people, but they're good kids. And I don't know. Maybe as they get, I'm sure as they get older, it'll become more complicated. But at this point in my life, I associate religion in general with a lot of things that cause division, and a lot of the more I guess difficult or bad things. And the good things that come from religion, I can see myself pulling from other areas of society. I can have my son in Boy Scouts without him being LDS. I can, you know, put my daughter in a mirage of sports or dance lessons and teach her about teamwork and community. You know, we can go and do community service without any church. And so it doesn't seem necessary to me at this juncture in my life.
Sure. What about just spirituality? Does the word spirituality even have a place in your framework now, or is for you spirituality just very closely tied with religion, and so it's better just a secular approach?
I think for me, spirituality is a lot more broad than religion. I think I don't pray. I don't teach my children to pray. I mean, they, like when our in-laws, for example, you know, there's a lot of prayer going on, and I teach my children to be still and quiet out of respect. But, you know, you don't have to close your eyes or fold your arms if you don't want to. But, I mean, I can read philosophy or poetry or, you know, in a manner of things that I can study, and for me that can be spiritual. I can go and you know, do something kind for my neighbors, and that for me can be spiritual, or listen to music that I found uplifting. And for me, that can be a beautiful spiritual thing. And it's just, it's not something that I define so narrowly as something that I have defined in organized religion.
Sure. So there's still a sense or a longing or an enjoyment of what the rest of us would call spiritual, but you just don't couch it in religious terms.
I don't know if I feel a longing. I don't know that it's even something that I search out, but I think that the church, I mean, the church defines, you know, the spiritual thing as these good feelings. You know, you pray over the Book of Mormon and you have a good feeling about that, and that's the spirit, and that's spiritual. And that's Heavenly Father telling you the church is true. Or, you know, someone gets up in fast and testimony meeting and starts crying, and that means that it's spiritual and the church is true. And for me, I don't necessarily go seeking for that emotional high, but there are things that I come across in my life from other directions that can bring me that same sense of peace and contentment and fulfillment.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Sure. Well, Heather, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on and share with us both your conversion and your deconversion stories, as well as your advice for, you know, dealing with loved ones who have lost their faith. I really do believe and hope that, you know, if you're LDS and you care about people's experience joining the church, and you want to make sure that they don't feel disenchanted or betrayed once they learn things after joining, I think your story will be helpful for those types of people. I know that temple matrons and temple workers will benefit from hearing a little bit about your temple story, because that was very moving. But also for those struggling with those who are leaving, I do know for a fact that you know, a parent who's on their deathbed, who's chosen to allow religion to come between them and their children, is going to look back and say, was it really right for me to allow religion to be that which separated us? So your call for compassion and love and understanding and boundaries, I think, is going to mean a lot to all sorts of believers, and probably to those who lose their faith as well. So I think you're doing a great service, and I just appreciate you making the time.
Thank you. I appreciate you making the time as well, John.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.